You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
Have you ever seen an arborist climbing a tall tree with ropes? It's really something to behold, and in this episode, we're lucky enough to have on Alexandra Julius from the Davy Tree Expert Company to help us understand a bit about the athletics of professional tree climbing. G'day, Alex. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. So, yeah, as I was telling you just before the show, as a horticulturist, climbing isn't really something that I'd thought a lot about until I started listening to arborist podcasts like The Educated Climber and the Climbing Arborist podcast.
Yes.
They're so cool. And yeah, so I think it's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of gardeners to hear about what you guys are actually doing.
Absolutely.
So you guys, sometimes you're called arborists, sometimes tree surgeons, but sometimes you'll see arborists in a bucket, like an elevated work platform, and sometimes you'll see them climbing. How much training actually goes into becoming a climbing professional?
You know, there's no formal program, unfortunately. Well, I'm speaking from the United States, so we don't have any formal apprenticeship or program, but to be a competent climber, there's training that you need in not only the equipment that you're using, but also biology, understanding the tree species that you're in, understanding how trees respond to the work we're doing. There's physics involved with how we're moving wood around and changing the dynamics of the trees. There's the biomechanics of, again, how trees move and how they're responding to their environment. So there's a lot of science that goes into it, as well as the athleticism of the climbing itself. So there's a fair bit of work. It's definitely not like a one and done and you know everything. That takes years of perfecting and honing skills.
Mm. So you mentioned there the athletics of climbing, and that's really where we're going to focus on today. So what are the physical demands, and realistically, how fit do you need to be to sort of be good at this job?
You know, it's changed a lot in the last number of decades. So before, the equipment was pretty limited, and so there was a lot of just muscle through it, get yourself up in the tree. Sometimes for a while, they didn't even use ropes, so they didn't use ropes until they got to the top, and then they tied in. So there you're kind of holding on for dear life and just hope you don't let go. Nowadays, we're always tied in, so that's not an issue, but there's still a lot of strength and technique that goes into it. So we're using our core we activate our core a lot to try and minimize how much we're using our arms, because once we're up in the tree, we have to use our arms to operate a chainsaw and do the work that we're actually hired to do. But there's also a lot of leg muscles that go into it. There's a lot of grace and balance and trying to put minimal weight on the limbs that you're climbing on. So there's just a lot of body movement and kind of understanding of body positioning that goes into it. So it does require being physically fit. And what that means as an arborist has changed over the years because the equipment has changed. So we now have equipment that makes it easier on our bodies. So we can activate our legs more than our arms, which has opened up the industry to people of different muscle groups who can now get themselves aloft who otherwise might not have been able to if they had to depend on their biceps.
That's a great point. I've been indoor climbing before, and that's the first thing that I found was that my brother, who's a much better climber than me, picked up straight away, stop using your arms because tomorrow they're going to be sore. And they were sore the next day, but my legs were fine because I was doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I started as a rock climber myself. And so slab climbing, when you're climbing over like a rock face that is sloped kind of away from you, that's a lot of balance, and it's activating your leg muscles versus when you're in an overhang, it's really your arms. And there's that difference too with trees, just what muscle groups you're using depending on just sort of the landscape of what it is that you're climbing. So it really changes all the time. So we have a ton of different equipment a lot of arborists are not going to use the same climbing system for every tree that they're climbing, because it's just going to depend on the climb, and each system is going to require different parts of their body. So there's a lot of experimenting and finding what works best for your body.
Do arborists always get along with the technique that they're using, or are there sort of different schools of thought?
Yeah, you know, not everything's made for everybody. So there's a method called footlocking, which is at this point considered a pretty old school method that is basically inchworming your way up a rope. And you are using your feet to basically lock the rope between your feet. And then you push up with your core and your arms and you kind of inch your way up a rope. A lot of people hate it. I absolutely love it, but it's the most taxing way, really, if you're not efficient at it, to get into a tree. Like, I'm exhausted after a few meters, but I still love it for historic purposes. But to better answer your question, yeah, not everything is for everybody. People play around with equipment because some equipment moves more quickly than others, and some people really want to feel solid and secure, and I'm not moving, and other ones want to be able to move freely without having to put a lot of work into their system to get themselves moving. So that there are those variances.
So it's like an art and a science.
Absolutely. The art and science of arboriculture.
Of climbing arboriculture, for sure. Like, even just the climbing in itself, let alone the pruning.
Oh, yeah.
So we talked a little bit about like the physical demands. Obviously, you're going to have to be physically fit to get your way up a tree. But what about the mental capacity for someone to be able to do it? What is required of someone mentally?
You know, there's the first and obvious are the heights, is that a lot of people first balk at it because they think, oh, well, I'm afraid of heights. Well, I personally don't think a lot of people are afraid of heights, but they're afraid of falling. And if you trust your system, and you know that your system's got you, then you're not afraid of the heights. You're afraid of the falling part. And then you feel secure in your system. And so that's all gone. So that's one piece of it, is that you are up in the air. And oftentimes there's nothing between you and the ground and a whole lot of air. But aside from that, there's the distraction factor. There's the everyday that's happening in people's lives that can cause them to forget to tie something, or they haven't double checked it. So there's definitely that need to be present and be aware of everything that you're doing while you're up in a tree, especially if you're operating heavy machinery. But there's also work planning happening. So we don't just sort of get into a tree and then there's the, well, now what? Well, we have a work plan. We've planned where we're going to be tied into the tree, where we need to get to first, what branch am I going to remove first, what branch am I going to remove next. And so I'm planning where I'm navigating in the tree. And then there's the other environmental factors. Are there pedestrians below? So having to keep people out of your drop zone, having to keep vehicles out. Is there bad weather coming? So all of those sorts of distractions and things that go into it that aren't even the work itself, but just everything that's happening around you have to be held into account. And that's where we also make sure we never work alone. So we always have at least somebody else who's there on the ground to make sure that we're doing those double checks, and that there's somebody else checking to make sure someone hasn't, that there's not a runner who has walked into the drop zone. And very often those people stop and look because they find it interesting. We're like, no, you need to get out from under. This is not the place where you stop.
Did you see those traffic cones?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they just stop you from walking in this zone.
Oh no, it was just a caution. Just move more slowly.
Yeah. Ooh, bright yeah. And shiny.
Right.
So obviously, like, there's a lot of dangers there. So you're mentioning that you've got the drop zone, you've got people dropping the things. And not only just do you have to be thinking about those things while you're performing the work, just like any other gardener, like, there's always risks involved. But you also have that element of physical exhaustion too, because I don't know about you, but I can climb a stairs and my attention can start to waver, let alone climb a tree.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, fatigue definitely plays into it. And that's going to be part of where we are being mindful of our crews, that when it's, especially say Friday before a holiday weekend and people are aching to get home, that's when we're particularly aware of, let's make sure we're still doing all of our double checks and that we're doing everything, we're not cutting corners, so that way everybody gets home to their long weekend safely. So that's, you're right, fatigue is definitely a part of it. Heat, I know you've got a lot of that over there, so yep. Making sure people
not
aren't.
Not at the moment, but...
but yes, in the summer, that we don't have people getting heat exhaustion, that they're staying hydrated. That's such a huge part of it. So making sure everybody is taking care of themselves throughout the day, eating food, good food.
Yeah. Maybe don't get on the beers the night before. Easier said than done, but
yeah, it's hard to enforce that one, but yes, that is very true.
So what sort of clothes do arborists like to wear when they're climbing?
Well, to each their own, right? We go for breathable, stretchy clothes. We want to have a lot of movement. I would say movement that allows you to move like yoga clothes, but nobody wants to actually wear yoga clothes in a tree. So it's going to be more stretchy, almost hiking material, but it's also got to be very durable because when you're climbing up tree bark, that snags a lot of things. So we've got some really good manufacturers who are making us clothes that are durable and don't get destroyed the first time we rub up on a branch. And then we also have chainsaw protection. So in some countries, you have to wear a chainsaw leg protection all the time, even if you're up in a tree. Where I'm at in the US, we don't, which is hopefully going to change because that's a bit weird. But yes, so chainsaw protection is part of it. Tall boots that are over the ankles, because even though we're up in trees, we still get a lot of twisted ankles, sprains, and then our standard personal protective equipment. So we're always wearing helmets and eye protection. We're using loud equipment. We're using hearing protection. So we're just keeping our bodies covered from the hazards around us.
Even if it's not the law to wear chainsaw chaps, yeah, probably a good idea to wear them.
Definitely good. And, you know, I've seen demonstrations of just how well they work. And they really jam up chainsaws fast. And it's way better to have to unjam that, which I've had to do personally, is get all of that Kevlar out of the chain is way better than having to go to the hospital and deal with the surgeries and the antibiotics and all that, the time off work. I'd much rather buy a new pair of chaps. So,
oh yeah,
definitely worth
it. Yeah, I've worked with a guy who has these giant zipper scars all over him from a chainsaw accident, and it's not pretty. And he got away well too. Like, you can so easily lose your leg. It'll grab you and bite you, and it won't let go until it's,
oh gosh. Yeah, and people think that they can stop it, and it's just, it's too fast. Nope.
That's like trying to stop a tiger or something. No, can't
stop it. Yeah, not going to happen.
No. All right, so I'm picturing we're a climber. We're climbing the tree using ropes. And if it was just our body, that would be one thing. But we got these chainsaws of varying size. Like, some of them are going to be huge that you're going to have to get up that tree. How do you get that equipment up into the tree?
So to start with, we have to get ourselves up into the tree. And that we do with what's called a throw line and a throw ball. So that is a very thin cord that we use that we can toss, kind of lob it like a pendulum. And it's got a weighted ball. And with a pretty good degree of accuracy, we can get throw ball up and over a branch union pretty high. I should have remembered in metrics, but you can get up like, I don't know, 16 plus meters up.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
And thanks for using meters too.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yes, I should have remembered that I don't know the conversion super well. But yes, we can get pretty good accuracy. And then from there, so we've got now this, if you can imagine, this string is going up and over a branch union that we've inspected and make sure that it is big enough and it's alive and that it can hold our weight. And then we take our rope and tie it to that throw line, and then we pull back through the other ways. And then once we've done that, now our rope is up in the tree. Once we've done that, again, we want to make sure we pull on it some and inspect again, and we quadruple check that it's heavy enough, or not heavy enough, big enough and strong enough to hold us. We get our system set up, and we use any number of ascent techniques that we have in our back pocket to get up into the tree. Now, for the heavy equipment, for something like a chainsaw, depending on the climb, we're very likely to not ascend with that, but have our grounds worker send that up after us. So once we've taken care of whatever we need to take care of, very often we have to reset where we're tied in once we're up there. But once we've gotten to where we're going to start doing work, We might have our grounds worker tie the chainsaw on or a pull saw or whatever it is that we're doing, have them tie it on and we can pull it up to us and then secure it to our harness.
Mm. So you're up there safe, then they send it up to you so you don't have to use one arm and two legs to get up.
Exactly. Now we do have everything that we have on us is attached to our harness. So we've got gear loops all over. We do always have a handsaw with us. So just in case we need to cut something, we'll have a handsaw. But then the chainsaw, we will pull up to us and arborist will generally have a clip of some sort, some non-locking piece, like you can imagine a hook with a gate on it. So that way it doesn't fall off, but that just gets attached to the harness. And so it's always secured. So you don't have this loose chainsaw just sort of flailing around in the tree, but it's attached to the climber and will have a breakaway lanyard. So if the chain of the chainsaw gets stuck in the branch, it'll break away from the arborist and not pull the arborist down with the chainsaw. So we have very specialized equipment to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in added danger by whatever it is that we have. So we want to have that chainsaw attached to us, but not so attached to us that should something happen, we go down with it.
Mm. It's a really good point about safety that you've sort of mentioned there. I think in this day and age, that's really forefront on pretty much everyone's mind. Like, it is a miracle that we don't see accidents every day from arborists.
Well, I don't know if it always makes the news, but we do unfortunately have a lot of incidents that happen. I worked down in Southern California where there's a lot of palm trees, and we have a lot of incidents that occur with palm fronds and people yeah. getting trapped in the trees. And so it is something that happens a fair bit. And what we do is we just try to educate people, hope that people go through the proper channels of getting trained and not just sort of storm chasers of, ooh, a storm came through, I'm going to get a chainsaw and a pickup truck and now I'm an arborist, but hope that they get the proper training and set a good example for what our industry is, because it is a profession. And so we want to have a professional image out there. So safety is that first piece. To me, that's my benchmark for if I'm driving by and I see a tree care company, is the first thing is just, do they have on their personal protective equipment? And that tells me a lot about that company. I don't even need to look at the work that they're doing. Is first of all, are they protecting their employees? So that's a whole other tirade for another day. But yes.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, it's such a basic thing, but it's like going into a restaurant and seeing their kitchen's dirty. It's like,
Oh gosh, yeah. I'll pick somewhere else, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So Davy Tree Expert Company that you work for, as we mentioned in the intro to this episode, you guys have undertaken an awesome research project that tracks what's going on in a climber's body when they're at work. Can you tell us a little bit about that research?
Yes. So some research was started last year that we will hopefully be picking back up post-COVID. But the idea of the research is that they were suiting up arborists with suits that were tracking what muscle groups were being used. And the idea is that you can see what climbing methods are being activated by, or what muscle groups are being activated by what climbing methods, and what muscle groups are we using the most. And that kind of information informs some work that we can do as a company in terms of how can we prevent musculoskeletal injuries, what kind of stretches can we have people do, what methods of climbing can we encourage people to do to take better care of their body. So there we might end up finding that there is a method that is just really taxing on one part of the body. So for instance, I mentioned earlier foot locking, which is, again, I love it. It's a very cool method, but most people are not, I'd call ambi foot lockers, are not foot locking both ways, and it can be really taxing on one hip depending on which way you lock. And so now you've got another hip that's not getting any attention, and you can get some lopsided muscle groups. So this research is, I don't think they're focusing specifically on foot locking. They're looking at other methods of climbing and looking more holistically at just sort of general wellness of nutrition and hydration and everything that it takes to be a what we call industrial athlete. And how can we take care of our employees and make sure that they have a long career? How do we minimize those injuries? How can we introduce equipment that is going to take better care of their body? So all of those kinds of things going into trying to prevent injuries and extend careers and just make for healthy arborists overall.
Mm. How many years do you reckon a normal arborist out in the wild can do that job for?
I like how you say out in the wild, like they're a wild animal.
Well, they kind of are. They do climb trees. They're basically
there. It is true. Very true. You know, I've heard different stories from different people because I've heard some of my friends will say, my body just does not like the fact that I'm an arborist. And I think for some people, it's very hard to maintain a long career. But I've seen people climbing well into their 60s. And I think for them, they have just really worked hard at taking care of their bodies over the decades by drinking water and stretching and getting plenty of sleep and all of those kinds of things. And they've made for a long, healthy career. So it doesn't have to be like football and ruining your knees and having a 5-year career. I think with taking care of our bodies properly, and especially as I mentioned before, with our new equipment that's coming out that is more ergonomic and we can customize our systems better for our bodies, I think it's going to do is really help us extend our careers as arborists and allow us to climb longer. So if I don't have to rely on my biceps well into my 60s, then I think I can extend my climbing career.
Yeah, because the legs are much stronger parts of your body than your arms. They're built for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Now, some people take climbing pretty seriously. Can you tell us about the climbing competitions that are held around the world?
Yes. Oh, gosh, I love them. Okay. So, first of all, I just want to say how many industries have a competition on how well they do their thing? And you've got people from competing companies. So on a regular day, these people are vying for the same jobs and are, again, competing companies. And now they're competing in a competition for fun on their day off to see who's the better climber. And the best part of it is that they're all cheering for each other. So even though they're their business competitor, they are rooting each other on and it's just a fun event. So what it is there are climbing competitions throughout the world and they test different skills that go into tree climbing. So for instance, we have throw line event, which is what I mentioned earlier of how we get our line into a tree. So we set up certain taped areas of a tree and they're worth certain points. And the point value is based on the height and the difficulty. And we have to, within a certain time frame, get the throw line and the rope through that particular branch union. And whoever accumulates the most points in that wins that event. So there are 5 events, each very different from one another. So it's not just about being the quickest climber, although there are a couple speed events. But then there's also a work climb where you start at the top of the tree and you work your way down. And there are cowbells that are simulating the branches that we would be cutting. So we get out our handsaw, we have to call an all clear and wait for a judge to say all clear. And we hit the cowbell. And then we might have a bucket there. And in the bucket, there are some dowels that are simulating the limbs that we'd have to toss. And then usually a kiddie pool or a trash can or something on the ground, we have to land it in that. So it's all things simulating what we would do in a day. So we drop branches out of a tree, but we have to do it with accuracy. We can't just like throw it into the client's window. We've got to like actually plan where it's going to go. So there's that. And then you'd work your way down and have what we call a limb walk, which is when we are walking out on a really long branch and we can't put our weight on it because then the branch starts to go lower and lower and lower. And in this event, we'll have a string with a weight on it. And depending on how low that weight goes, you're losing points. So you want to really keep your weight in the rope and not let that branch go too far down. So it's really trusting your system, and it tests that skill. So there are usually five stations in the work climb, and each have that kind of skill building piece. And all of that, the five events then culminate in what we call a master's challenge. So the winners from those preliminary events go on to a master's, where they start with a blank tree. They have to assess the tree. They have to throw into it. They have to get to their cowbells, do whatever the task is, come down, get their gear out. And it's usually about 30 minutes, depending on what the judges have predetermined. So depending on how difficult it is and the size of the tree, it could be a bit different. But it tests all of those skills from the preliminaries to then win the ultimate, which is once you've won your chapter, then you move on to your national. So there's an Asia Pacific, a North American, a European, and then from there, there's the international. And so, of course, everybody wants to win and be the world champion. So all of that builds up to that world championship. It's very exciting. I love it. I lose every time, and I am perfectly fine with it, because there's just so much, just the camaraderie. I'm always learning because I'm watching other people who are way better than me do amazing things. Like, I didn't even think of, I would not have done it that way.
Yeah.
And they do it way better. So I learn a ton from it. Meeting really cool people who, I mean, it takes a certain type of person to then want to do their job outside of their job, unpaid. Like, this is fun time. They've paid to be in this competition. So it's already going to be people who are super into it. And we're usually all gear nerds. So we're being nerdy, talking about what gear we have. So if you can't tell, I really enjoy it. But
yeah. Well, a lot of arborists do. A lot of arborists are just so passionate. Like, you can just feel the passion coming off them.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably akin to just like the type of people who are attracted to tree climbing were already kind of risk takers and kind of nonconformists of like, oh, I'm going to do this really random career. Like, usually people aren't saying, I hope my child becomes an arborist growing up. And hopefully we change that perception. Mm. But we're kind of an odd breed who get into this. So throw us all together in a competition and it's just a whole bunch of awesome.
Bit of a wild time.
Yeah.
So it does seem like a pretty cool job. Do you have any advice for anyone out there who would like to maybe have a go and jump into that industry?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are a number of things. So one of them is finding a good mentor, finding someone who can sort of lead you along and teach you the right things. There's so much bad out there on YouTube and just sort of misinformation that can lead to really dangerous behavior. So I'd like to really encourage people to find a mentor, somebody who you trust is responsible, safe, uses their personal protective equipment. Again, look for those red flags. I know when I was job hunting originally at the beginning of my career, I was on a job interview and the person brought me onto an active job site without any personal protective equipment. We were under rigging equipment, and that was my red flag of, I don't need to work here. Mm-hmm. So finding somebody who can help you along, and then joining your local ARB association. So there are several chapters and associate organizations around the world. You've got Arboriculture Australia and Queensland Arb Association out there, which will get you some really great information to learn about the equipment, but also the biology of trees, everything that we were talking about. They'll be able to provide some really good information about how to get off on the right foot.
That's awesome.
And then the last piece that we're trying to raise more awareness about these days is just buying your equipment from a reputable dealer. So with online shopping, it's so easy these days to just get anything at your doorstop the next day. But we also are seeing more lookalike equipment popping up, where equipment that is made to look like the real thing is, you're like, oh, I could buy a harness for $50. Why am I going to get it for $300 from here when it's cheap over here. I won't name names, but you know, there's some online retailers that I would not recommend that you get your equipment from, that people die from it because they've purchased their ropes at a hardware store, or they're trying to go out and do tree work in their rock climbing harness. It just doesn't work. So there are some really great retailers out there that specialize in tree care, and they have the equipment that we need that's approved and will keep us safe. And it's worth the cost. Your life is worth the money that it is to pay for the equipment to keep you up in a tree safely. So yeah, it's not cheap to get into tree climbing, but.
Yeah. Can you give a shout out to the good ones?
Yeah, there are some really great ones. I don't know too many in your area, unfortunately.
That's fine. We do have US listeners.
I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. So there's Shelter Tree, Cheryl Tree, Free Worker is out in Europe, Bartlett Tree Stuff. So there are, that's just a few to start with, but really just starting with those, if they have really focused on ARB and aren't like trying to be something for everybody, and looking for those reputable brands. So looking for the Petzls, Buckinghams, Casks, so like name brands of equipment, even if that's not what you buy, but if you see that that's what they're selling the legit stuff, and you can start to get familiar with what it looks like. So like Petzl's one of our leading brands of equipment, and that's a lot of the equipment that I've seen where other places have tried to make lookalikes where I'm like, ooh, I know what Petzl looks like, and this is just a little bit off. And it's just because it's such a big brand that people are trying to make up their own thing and fool people. You just got to trust your gut of like, ooh, this is not quite right. So just really that it goes back to the having a mentor is having somebody who says, I've gone to this retailer and I trust them and they have good equipment, all that. Because that's right from the start, right? You need your equipment to get into the tree. So we got to start with the right equipment. So
yeah,
those are some the retailers that are vetted, good, selling reputable equipment that will keep you safe.
Yeah, cool. And I just wanted to touch on Davy Trees as well, Alex, because as someone who's into plants, like I on social media and stuff, Davy just keeps popping up time and time again. You guys are leading in so many different areas. Like this research we were talking about today is just such an example of leadership. How does Davy basically do it? Like what makes them so special that they're always going out and taking initiative?
Well, I mean, it's a big company. It's employee owned. So there's just a lot of opportunity to be able to do really neat things like research. So, I mean, when you've got such a big body, we've got the people who really hold the company together, who are the ones who are out in the field doing the tree work, and they're plugging away night and day doing just amazing work. So that way the rest of us can be conducting research, developing training, doing other outreach programs that allow us to just sort of extend our reach. And it's pretty amazing. Like I did not No, I joined Davy 2.5 years ago, so I did not know just all of the things that we do. And I'm still discovering things that we do that reach working in wetlands, working in on the utility line. There's just a ton. So, and I think a big part of that is the employee ownership piece and the fact that our employees are so invested in our own company because it's our money getting recirculated in there that we're invested in doing a good job and coming up with new and creative ideas and having that supported just makes it great for creativity, such as the research that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so cool. If I was in the US or... Because you're in Canada too, are you?
Yes.
US
yes,
and Canada? Are. Yeah. Yeah, I would love to work for a company like Davy. Good on yous. It's awesome.
Come on over.
Yeah. Well, I'm a horticulturist. I don't know if you'd have me.
We definitely have a place for you.
Oh, do you? Okay. Well, maybe one day. So, Alex, I always like to ask our guests at the end one final open-ended question, which doesn't actually have to be on topic. You can speak about anything you'd like. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about?
Oh, wow. I had stayed on topic.
Yeah. So this is a fun one.
Yeah.
You can talk about anything.
I don't know. I could go Bob Barker and just say spay and neuter your pets.
Yeah. That's a great one for wildlife.
Yeah, there we go. I'll go that route.
So why should somebody care about spaying and neutering their pets?
Well, we want to manage the population, make sure we're not overrun with feral pets who then get harmed, get diseased out in the wild and don't have the care that they need. You know, being in Southern California, there was just a lot of feral cats, and they, unfortunately, being in urban areas, they get hit by cars. They just don't live a great life. So it's good to be responsible about your pets and take care of them. I don't know if that's the route you really wanted to go, but, you know, I'm going to go there.
No, that's awesome. That's what it's for.
Take care of our wildlife. Yeah.
Yeah, and we care about that here at the Plants Grow Here podcast. It's really important to us. So really great message.
Thank you.
Thanks for an awesome episode, Alex. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Daniel. It's been fun.
It's not a career for the faint of heart, but for the right person, arboriculture can be a real dream job, and it deserves more attention. Check the show notes for relevant links, including videos of people climbing massive trees. Davey is a leader in this space, so reach out to them if you're in North America and you're in need of professional tree care, or even if you're looking to further your career in the industry. If you like this sort of content, check out our back catalogue and subscribe and follow for future episodes.